Hey, everybody. Welcome to 10 Movies, the podcast where we dig into the work of one actor through 10 of their films. I'm Hemel. With me is Brian. This season, we're talking about Matthew McConaughey.
All right. Mr. McConaughey himself, the legendary golden boy of American film.
And today, we're going to be looking at the 2005 film Sahara.
McConaughey, Cruz, Zahn, Macy. Wilson. There's really a lot of good actors in this movie.
There's a lot of good actors in
this movie. Possibly wasted on it.
Is it Sahara or Sahara?
As a God-fearing American, I have always said Sahara.
Sahara.
And if the people from that part of the world want to say something differently, let them come here and say it.
They're not on this podcast. We are.
That's right. Start your own podcast, North African people. We've gone down a racist rabbit hole right off the top of the bat.
This is so funny. All right, we in my notes I have it that we need to talk about the race issue in this film, but we're definitely going to do that.
For the record, I welcome using the proper pronunciation of all major geographical regions around this earth, but I know I'm going to default to saying Sahara, so.
Yeah, I think that we have been raised the way we've been raised, and it is Sahara.
So I have a challenge for you as we get into this film.
All right.
As many of our listeners, the legions of them out there, will not immediately recall the details of these movies, even if they may have seen them. So, as you know, we like to refresh them on the details of the story. You often skimp. And this movie is chock-a-block full of plot. It has plot coming out of its eye holes. So I would love to hear you tackle the plot of this movie, and I want you to do it justice.
There's no way I can do it justice.
There's a lot of plot.
There is a lot of plot in this film, and if there's one thing that we've learned, especially if you've been a longtime listener of this podcast, is that Brian cares a lot about plot. I care very little about plot.
I care about the story. Does it make sense? Is it enjoyable?
Here is the plot.
Good luck.
Matthew McConaughey is a treasure hunter / sea diver who is looking for this mythical lost shipwreck. Apparently a ship in America.
A Civil War era ironclad.
Exactly. I don't know what an ironclad is, but I think it's a kind of ship.
You know, the Monitor, the Merrimack.
Okay, no. Brian's a nerd. He's looking for this ship. And
which, crucially, he believes left the shores of Virginia in the 1800s and somehow crossed the Atlantic Ocean to Africa.
So that is why they're in Africa, right? He's in Africa as a part of some other naval thing that I have actually not been able to figure out, where he runs into Penelope Cruz in a very dramatic instance that is also a little sexist, which I think this movie's kind of rife with it. You know, runs into Penelope Cruz, and she's a doctor who's trying to figure out the source of this mysterious plague.
Yes.
She's a World Health Organization doctor.
Nigerians are dying, yes. And she wants to find out why, and she'll stop at nothing to do it.
They think that the plague is in Mali, so they get on a boat and they go to Mali to look for this plague.
She convinces Dirk Pitt, the unfortunately named McConaughey character, and his sidekick, Steve Zahn, to take her and her partner to Mali.
Right, so she's there looking for a plague. He's there looking for a cruise ship. You know what? I'm not going to get into how their paths cross back up again, but they do. It turns out the shipwreck.
In an extremely unlikely fashion, the two plot threads do converge.
But yeah, it turns out the ship is related to the disease in a way. And then they end up uncovering a scheme, a toxic waste dump scheme.
Yeah, so there's a French industrial villain who is dumping toxic waste into the groundwater.
Yep.
And he is in cahoots with an evil warlord who rules Mali with an iron fist.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the evil warlord.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And the thing that doesn't... Well, so the point that where the plot threads converge is... He abandons his quest for the mythical long-lost Civil War ironclad in order to rescue Penelope Cruz. It turns out that the final resting place of the long-lost Civil War-era ironclad turns out to be the location of the industrial waste
dump,
which is also some sort of solar...
Yeah. It's a solar farm.
Solar farm.
So yeah, all these very disparate plot threads in the end up converging in very unlikely manner, but that is somehow super entertaining.
No, no, no. By the time, there's so much plot that by the time you get to the end of the movie, you're just exhausted. Like, there's this movie to me has a lot of squandered potential, and the over plotting of it, I think, is a major culprit.
There's so much plot because this is based on a novel, right?
But, you know, you got to leave some shit out when you turn a novel into a movie.
Yeah, but in this one, it was very hard to leave some stuff out.
Now, had you seen this movie prior to watching it for the podcast?
I had not seen this movie prior.
And it sounds like you enjoyed it.
I actually did really like it. I think that it is a really good adventure movie, but there's absolutely no depth in this film whatsoever. Like, there's no depth. Like, we just talked about Reign of Fire, which could have been just a crazy movie about people fighting dragons, but there's a lot of depth and somberness to this film, to Reign of Fire. And Sahara is this incredibly shiny, surface-level epic.
Which is okay. Like, I feel like I was really rooting for this movie because I love a good adventure.
I liked it.
And but I felt like they I don't think they took it too seriously. I think they brought, like, the right kind of energy to it. But, yeah, it's so burdened by all the things that are happening.
So did you not like it?
I was a little bit indifferent to it. I wanted to like – I remember seeing it before, and I had a good impression of it. And, like I was totally there for it, right? Like, McConaughey and Zahn, and they're, like, wisecracking buddies. And I love the tone of the movie in that, like, they're constantly in peril, and they're getting shot at, and people getting murdered. And, yeah, they're playing, like, you know, Creedence songs, and they're, like, whenever they get out of a jam, they're like, woo, let's do a number 22, and they throw a watermelon at the bad guy, and they run off. Like, it had that, like campy, madcap energy.
Yeah, and you didn't like it.
But it needed to be, like, 90 minutes of that instead of, like, there's a whole extra hour that they put in just to get through all their extremely burdensome plot twists.
I think of this movie as a cross between National Treasure and Lawrence of Arabia. This is a very precursor to National Treasure, right? Because it's a crazy guy going on a quest of something that nobody believes in, and then all this other stuff happens.
Yeah, National Treasure I love. Or like The Mummy with Brendan Fraser. This to me is that kind of movie, but it does not have it does not have the energy and fun of those movies.
Well, National Treasure is very focused and it has like a much more like complicated conspiracy, right? This is like, hey, we just found the boat.
But in National Treasure, you always know, the plot there is ridiculous too, but you always know like exactly what's happening and what the next thing is and why.
Yeah.
And in Sahara, it is so easy to lose track of, like, what, who's that guy? Why are they going there? Why did that happen?
Yeah, Sahara, to me, this is very much feels like a book adaptation because in a novel, you can start lots of different threads and then eventually bring them together because you need to hold the reader's interest for a very long period of time. This is like we mentioned something 40 minutes ago and you expect people to remember it and they're not going to remember.
Yeah, like, what's that coin? And who is that guy? And is he the warlord? No, he's a different warlord.
There is a lot happening in this movie, but I think it comes together in a pretty satisfying way, and it doesn't pretend to be too heavy, so it worked for me.
I give it a C.
I'm surprised that it was not a bigger hit.
I can see why it was not a bigger hit, and we can talk about this in a moment, but it seemed like they thought it was going to be a big hit. They were setting it up to be the beginning of like the next Indiana Jones franchise.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about the casting in this film, which you touched on. But
great
we've got,
cast.
Yeah, great cast. We've got Matthew McConaughey as Dirk.
Dirk Pitt.
Just unfortunate names.
He unfortunately named Dirk Pitt.
Steve Zahn as his best friend, Al.
Love Steve Zahn in this movie.
Love him in this film. Love him in general, I think.
Yeah, he's. I always enjoy him in things. He's always like he's always second fiddle, but...
William H. Macy as the retired Navy Admiral.
Mm-hmm, yeah, solid cigar-chomping performance by William H. Macy.
I appreciate him in this. Rainn Wilson from The Office.
Who was funny in this movie.
He's funny and not annoying.
Yeah, I think, yeah, he sometimes shades quickly into annoyingness, but yeah, I think his character is really funny in this.
And also Penelope Cruz.
How did you feel about Penelope Cruz's work here?
All right, so let's talk about this. Are we ready to talk about some of the troubling themes in this?
Yeah, well, is there anyone else in the cast that's... the guy who played the Merovingian in The Matrix is back as a... Or maybe he was here prior as another evil Frenchman.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know who that was, but that guy's good.
And her partner doctor,
yes,
who was murdered by bad guys. I can't remember the name of the character. I don't remember the name of the actor, but he played Mayor Royce in The Wire, who is such a treacherous snake that the whole, like, the whole first few scenes with this guy is like, oh, he's the bad guy. He's going to betray her. And I was like, why do I think that? Like, oh, because he was the bad mayor on The Wire.
No, he's good in this film, though. He's good in it.
Yeah, he
And I think Delroy Lindo plays a CIA
agent. Yes.
Who comes in, like, literally three-fourths of the way through the film. Like, they introduce a new character.
Yes, very complicated, unnecessarily.
Yeah, they tried to make it kind of like a CIA Jack Ryan thing, which, like, it didn't need to be.
There's this whole layer of Jack Ryan-y shit in there that we don't need.
No, we don't. Your Tom Clancy is not what we're going for here. But yeah, I want to talk about Penelope Cruz. I want to talk about Penelope Cruz in this movie. First of all, she is so stunningly beautiful. Like, I don't want to objectify her, but she's like incredibly pretty. And I really like her in this film. I don't think she's given a lot to do in this film.
Yeah, her character's kind of one note.
It's a very one note. I'm a doctor. I'm out to save everybody, which is fine. It's a trope. And her character is pretty much as flat as the Dirk character, right? None of these characters have a lot of depth or dimension to them. Like, they've got one thing, like action guy, funny guy, hard-nosed boss guy. That's all they are. But she's the only woman in this film. Mm-hmm. There is...
In a movie with lots of roles. Like Reign of Fire, there's only basically three characters and a dragon.
Right.
But this movie's got a good dozen supporting characters.
Like, there's a lot of different roles in this film. And the fact that she's the only woman is... It feels a little creepy here because she's just surrounded by aggressive men the entire time.
Right.
They take away her agency all the time, just in terms of now she got captured and now she needed to be saved. She has a couple of moments where she does the saving, but it feels like more of a nod to, hey, we had a woman do something, you know, exciting.
Yeah, they set her up as, they do this very, like, almost like kind of pandery girl power scene where early on she's like, we're going to go to Mali and you're not going to stop us because we're going to go to the papers. And everyone's like, well, not going to stop her. She's tough.
Exactly.
But you don't really see a lot of that later.
No, and you know, Dirk needs to come and save her a couple of times. And they're played for emotional laughs. But so here's my main complaint with how she's treated and with this film, which is that one, she is obviously the love interest, right? She's the only woman there and she's going to fall in love with Matthew McConaughey.
And she does.
Two, these two never speak to each other. They have one scene in the beginning where he saves her and she's like, and he's like, hey, how are you doing?
She's being attacked by assassins on the beach and he comes out of the ocean and kills them with a knife.
Right. Like, he's just like some kind of crazy Aquaman that came to land. And they share this like one scene on a boat where they exchange a handful of words. And he's like, where do you live? She's like, Monterey, but I never go there. And then they have another short scene.
That basically is the script at that point.
So, but my problem is that they never talk to each other. And in scenes where it is Steve Zahn, Matthew McConaughey, and Penelope Cruz, he never speaks to her. He is always
talking to his buddy.
He is always talking to Steve Zahn. There's a scene towards the very end. It's like the third climactic battle, right? Like, you've got climactic battle one, number two, number three.
Too many climactic battles, movie.
So it's the third one, and they're in the ship. And he is just talking to Steve Zahn the entire time. And you notice it in several other places in the film, too, where she's there. He just doesn't direct any comments to her.
I actually did not really notice it, but now that you say that, you're exactly right. There is a lot. Yeah, the three of them share a lot of screen time together, and it is the two of them. And they're supposed to have this, you know, background and all this past, sure. But, yeah, the two of them are interacting directly and constantly.
Yeah, they're absolutely talking to each other, and she is just completely there as the love interest, and she has no relationship to him outside of, this is a person who I am sexually attracted to.
Right.
It's very upsetting.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Did you buy their attraction to one another?
You know what? They're both so super hot, and they're both so, like, so much charisma and, like, sexiness oozing out of them, you cannot not fall for it.
Yeah, but, like, in A Time to Kill, like, you absolutely believe that McConaughey and Sandra Bullock were attracted to one another. But as you point out, like, in that movie, the two of them interacted quite a bit. Like, you got to see their relationship develop. In this one, you don't. And I actually didn't think they had any real chemistry. I hadn't given it a lot of thought, but I think that's the reason why. Like, the movie doesn't earn any chemistry.
It doesn't. I mean, you already know de facto she's going to be the love interest. They put no effort into these two characters really getting to know each other, aside from, hey, I saved her a couple of times, and I think she's kind of hot, and we're both kind of hot, so it's obvious we're going to bone.
Yeah, why wouldn't she be into Steve Zahn? He's there. He's doing action guy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I actually did fall for it, because I think that, like, there's one scene where they're getting ready to part ways, and this is probably where he flirts with her, like, very overtly. And I bought that scene, so I think there's chemistry there.
Yeah, the one scene where he asks her out on a date, although it's a weirdly stilted piece of, like, he's like, hey, I know a lady who has a house in Monterey. And she's like, oh, I do too. Oh, it's me. It's a very weird flirting.
Yeah.
But yeah, if the movie had done more of that, I would have bought it more.
Yeah, I would have bought it more. And that's the one thing I really, like, bugged up on is that she's there in the room and he's just not talking to her. He's just talking to Steve Zahn.
Yeah, again, the stronger version of this movie is a much more streamlined film where the three of them and their developing relationships are driving the plot rather than all this extraneous stuff.
And like you said, had this actually been a bigger success and turned into a franchise, some of that stuff could have developed.
We'll never know.
We won't. So yeah, while we are talking about genders that have not been well used in this film, let's talk about race, too. We're on a little bit of the political side here. I think that, like a lot of films, not even of this era, it centers the white characters in an African civil war, and it makes it about them versus everything happening around them.
Yes, but I will say that it is weird to treat like the movie doesn't really show a lot of violence, but you know, like. Yeah, like civil conflict in sub-Saharan Africa is a fairly violent thing. So, and yeah, they allude to it. So it is weird to set like a wacky adventure comedy in the middle of that. But I did think, especially up before that, like the movie takes place almost completely in Africa. I was struck, and especially in the early third of the movie, by how Africa is depicted, right? Like a lot of movies set in Lagos, Nigeria, then they go to Mali. Africa is depicted as, like, a very different place from America, but, like, the characters are comfortable with it, and it seems, like, I think a lot of American films tend to show Africa as these harsh extremes, but I thought, like, all the Lagos stuff, it looks like a big, bustling city, like, the people are living their lives, it's a very, like, functional, urban place. Like, there's a lot of little shots and sort of small building scenes of the characters, like, doing things and getting meals and interacting with people. And I feel like that to me seemed like a very, like, authentic and warm portrayal of a big African city that isn't pathologizing it in some way.
I agree. I think I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're right. It's very much a reality version of Africa versus this doctored version of like extreme poverty or something like that, right? You just see people going about their regular lives and these people fitting into what those regular lives are. I think that's fair. Again, the race thing for me is just like, oh, we center white characters and make it about their adventure in what is obviously something, a larger socio-political thing that's happening.
Yeah, it's an odd choice. And Mali is a real place. So it's even more odd. And this warlord guy is a fictional character. But it's very odd to mix those things.
Right, especially because considering the tone that you said, which was, here he is doing a bunch of cool stuff, and the background is supposed to be the Civil War. Like, you know, the Mali Civil War that's happening.
Yeah, and he even enters into this. He convinces one faction to, you know, go against another faction. And if they really looked at that with a serious way, like, you know, people are probably getting their arms chopped off by these two, like, groups of warring men with machetes.
Yeah, and again, the trope that leans on is a little bit of, like, here's a white guy coming in to save us.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not, like, he's very self-centered in that he really doesn't care about this conflict at all. This conflict is very much the backdrop
right.
of the thing he wants, which is the girl in the ship.
Yeah, and that's fine. I think that's again, this comes from, I think, the movie's novel origins, which is that it is about, like, a very central character, and everything that does not happen to him is background. It's extraneous. But yeah, so speaking of the fact that this movie was a novel, had this very strong presence in Dirk, whose last name I cannot
remember. Dirk Pitt.
Dirk Pitt. I don't know why I can never remember that.
Because it's dumb. It's a dumb name.
What did you think about Matthew McConaughey as Dirk Pitt?
Yeah,
the McConaughey-ness.
I think this movie is very McConaughey, right? Like, his strengths seem tailor-made for this role, right? Like, he's charming, and he's like the character really, like, he's very competent, but mostly he gets by on confidence, right? Like, him and his buddy Steve Zahn are constantly like, oh, we're gonna do something crazy and it's gonna work out. And Rainn Wilson's like, oh my god, has it worked out before? And like, nope, but it's gonna work out this time, right? Like, the character is all built around this, like, confident male optimism, but again, he's not he's competent, he's physical, and he's even dangerous, but he's not threatening, he's not a jerk, he's very, like, Dirk Pitt is McConaughey. He's like the version of McConaughey.
Yeah, it's funny because McConaughey, like you said, he usually plays laid back, right? Like, that's what he's best known for, is laid backness. And here it works in his favor, again, as action guy, overly confident action guy, yeah, with just enough laid backness.
He's chill.
Right. Even though they're stranded in the middle of the desert, he's still super chill, still super good natured. This is probably the most McConaughey role, I think, because it hits all of the things that he's really good at.
Yeah, of the movies we've watched so far, this is the movie that leans hardest into the McConaughey persona. And, like, the bits of the movie I really liked were, like, him and Steve Zahn. They have a great relationship, and Steve Zahn is a great comic relief. When they are in peril, like, they're getting shot at, and they're still wisecracking, and they're, you know, they're doing crazy stunts, and McConaughey's jumping off of this boat and that boat and jumping onto a tank. Like, all that stuff plays really well. I think that's the what the movie should have been.
I think there's enough of it in there. Like, yeah, you said that it got bogged down. Like, there, but there's enough of McConaughey, Steve Zahn just being wacky and having adventures that it totally works in his favor. What did you think about the McConaughey tan?
The tan didn't work great for me, and the mustache. While we're on the topic. He's got a very...
What about, like, the beaded necklace?
He's got a beaded necklace. I mean, that's what Dirk Pitt would wear, right? Dirk Pitt is an ex-Navy SEAL salvage diver. He wears a puka shell necklace.
It's the McConaughey tan to me on this was incredible because
it's noticeable.
Yeah, he's like George Harrison tan. Like, it's so tan.
And I guess, like, the idea that this character is, like, constantly on the deck of a boat or in a desert or whatever...
Yeah, but this tan is excessive. This is like tanning bed gone wrong tan.
What was the most McConaughey moment of the film for you?
That's a very good question. Do you have one that you can start with? Actually, I changed my mind. I think I got one.
All right.
And I want to grab it before I think you do. it is the scene where he is flirting with Penelope Cruz. And he is like, hey, maybe I'll see you in Monterey. But he leans into the sexiness that they didn't give him in The Wedding Planner. Mm. But I think that's a peak McConaughey moment, especially because he's just, you know, he looks like he's like windblown and they've just gotten off this long trip. And he just kind of leans on her car and he's like, we're saying goodbye, but it's going to be a super sexy goodbye. It's like, it's very good.
Yeah, for Dirk Pitt and for McConaughey. No woman would turn him down.
Yeah.
And if they did, they've just made a mistake, right?
Exactly.
Like, he's 100% confident.
And the thing is that there's creepy ways to do this that would get you, like, slapped.
Yes.
And he manages to read the situation correctly and be just charming enough that it is endearing and not repulsive.
Yeah, he always manages to smolder in just the right way. Even
yeah.
in Reign of Fire,
yeah.
where he's not sexy, he's still smoldering. He's smoldering with, like, Google-eyed intensity, but he's still emitting a smolder.
Yeah, and there's no intensity here. What was, you got one?
You know, I knew this question was coming. I should have given the man a little bit of thought. There was a lot of moments I enjoyed that were cut from the same cloth, and that's what I said earlier, like the wacky stunts. They're wisecracking throughout him. He's saying crazy stuff to Steve Zahn. Some sort of classic rock tune is playing. My favorite scene like that was they're on a boat. So William H. Macy has loaned them his boat, which they then explode. And
yeah.
they're unrepentant about exploding it. And they're going up the river. They're being chased by the warlord's minions. The boat's wreck, and he jumps onto the bad guy's boat, and there's this long extended sequence where he's trying to get back onto his own boat. The guy on the boat is shooting at him. The guys on the shore are shooting at him. He's crouched, like, on the gunwale, and he's still directing this plan back at the other boat to Steve Zahn and Rainn Wilson. And, like, that should have been a really stupid scene, but it's gripping and it's fun. And, like, McConaughey, like, I believe that Dirk Pitt is totally in control of that situation.
I think it should just be when he says, we're going to pull a Panama, right? Like, it's one of those lines.
Yeah,
that
the whole Panama bit was really good.
Yeah, it's one of those lines that as a viewer, you know, it doesn't mean anything, right? But it's just like a hook, but it does really well.
Yeah, they're in dire straits, and McConaughey says to Steve Zahn, we're going to do a Panama, and
right.
Steve Zahn runs down into the cabin and starts looking for something. And the whole, and another funny bit about the scene, the whole time, William H. Macy, their boss,
yeah.
who has given them this book, is on the phone. Like, the phone, they haven't hung it up. And he's like, oh, no, they're going to do a Panama. And, like, yeah, again, it's a dumb setup, but it pays off.
It just makes me so furious that women never get to be part of these fun scenes.
Half of these characters could have been women.
It is just, like, it just drives me nuts that we're not allowed to have any kind of fun in these movies, right? It's just a bunch of guys doing guy stuff. And unless you're hot like Penelope Cruz and willing to bone Dirk, you're not really involved in this.
And interestingly, now that you say it, the action scenes that she's not in are very much played for laughs,
yes!
even though they are life-threatening.
Yes!
The action scenes that she's in, though, those are the scary ones because a lady is in danger.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that
totally.
Is such a good point. I was trying to pinpoint, like, there's so many action scenes here in this film, and they are insanely over the top, right? Like, they're completely ludicrous, but they're played for laughs, so it ends up being totally fine because, again, super surface-level movie. They don't want you to think too deep about anything here except for the ones with Penelope Cruz.
Yeah, when these surfer action dude cowboys, their lives are in danger, it's a hoot. But when her life is in danger, the stakes are high, the music changes, McConaughey's upset that she might get hurt.
Yeah, I wish to God there was, like, a fun action movie and a woman could just be a part of it.
So. Yeah, like the Rainn Wilson character, the William H. Macy character. And they're both good in this movie, but, like, those roles didn't have to be dudes.
Yeah, exactly. And this movie very much is, like, about male friendship in terms of, like, the relationship between Matthew McConaughey and Steve Zahn and the relationship they have with the Admiral. It's all about male relationships.
His relationship with the CIA guy.
Yep. Like, William H. Macy and the CIA guy have this, like, you know, remember October.
You owe me from that time.
Yeah, like, they've got deep histories that go all the way back. And the woman, she's just here as a love interest.
You know, something Wendy, who was forced to watch these movies with me, pointed out that only happens in action movies. William H. Macy's like, CIA guy, you gotta go in there and get my boys. And Delroy Lindo's like, there's no way, I can't possibly get your boys. Not gonna happen. And William H. Macy says, don't forget, you owe me for that thing. And Delroy Lindo says, all right, but after this, we're even. The slate is cleared, which happens all the time.
All the time.
But I've never done that to anyone. Like, people don't actually have that, like, transactional moment.
That's really funny.
But it always happens in these movies.
Okay, so one question that I have for you. We're going to talk about the movie MVP in a second. But before we get to that, there's one scene, again, over the top, where Steve Zahn and Matthew McConaughey are stranded in the desert, handcuffed, tied to a giant piece of steel.
That's a great... Again!
It's great!
Brilliant bit in the movie.
Brilliant,
funny
bit.
Wish the whole movie had been that.
Brilliant, funny bit in this whole movie. If you were handcuffed to somebody in the desert, who would you pick?
If I had to be handcuffed to someone that I know? That's a heavy question. You might be on my list. I feel like we would.
We would actually do pretty well.
Yeah, I feel like we would do good in that situation. Who would you pick?
I was just going to say that the one thing that I thought about during that scene is that there's no way that anybody gets out of that alive. This is kind of a trick question. Like, there's no way you're not going to want to kill the person who you're handcuffed to.
Yeah, that's why I wouldn't pick my lovely wife.
Yes!
I feel like we would bring a lot of pre-existing baggage to that scenario that would not aid us.
I thought about it, and I was like,
Or my brother.
Yeah, I would not pick my sister, because we would kill each other.
Yeah, you'd be mad about something that happened 2 years ago right off the bat.
And again, the relationship, if you ever got, like, to, you know, someplace safe and got unhandcuffed, the relationship would just be over.
So I'm glad you mentioned that scene. So they've been kidnapped by the warlord's henchmen. They're handcuffed in the bed of a truck. They figure out this, like, McConaughey figure, I'm going to use my golden coin to unscrew the thing. They kick the bed out onto they escape out into the desert. They have to hoof it across the desert, still handcuffed to the iron truck bed. They find the remains of a crashed airplane.
Get it to work.
Get it, but they don't get it to work as a plane. They turn it into, like, this crazy windsurfing thing.
Yeah.
The classic rock soundtrack cranks up, and they're sailing like a tattered aircraft carcass across the desert going, woohoo! That's great! Do all of that!
You know what's interesting to me is that they probably marketed this movie as, like, an epic love story when they should have really just focused on the buddy comedy aspect, because that is what really works in the film.
Yeah, buddy adventure comedy scenes are all gold, and then... you're in a conference room with, you know, talking about algae for 20 minutes.
Exactly. They wanted a big epic when really they had the makings of a really good buddy comedy, and they kind of, I don't want to say they squandered it because there's enough of it.
Squandered it. They squandered it.
If they had done better, we probably could have had a sequel.
Yeah, we could have had a whole series of entertaining Dirk Pitt adventures.
I think the movie MVP is pretty obvious here, but
you're going to say Steve Zahn.
It's Steve Zahn.
He's great in this movie.
He's really good in this movie. I've only seen him in, I think, two movies, Sahara and Reality Bites, but he's great in both of them.
Yeah, he's got a great deadpan delivery.
Yeah. And he knows his role really well, right? Like, there's this really funny line at the very end, tail end of the movie where Matthew McConaughey and Steve Zahn are staring at each other and they're trying to figure out who's going to defuse the bomb and who's going to go rescue the lady. And Steve Zahn's like, duh, you go get the girl.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a scene where Matthew McConaughey takes off and they're eating lunch and Steve, and it's a really obvious thing. It's not even that clever, but he has this conversation with himself like, oh, don't worry about the check. I'll get it.
Yeah.
And it's, even though you know it's coming and it's not particularly clever, it's funny just the way he says the lines.
He's got good delivery. But yeah, Steve Zahn's the movie MVP.
You know, that's hard to argue with. In the interest of having a second choice, though, I will say the William H. Macy character is great. Like, again, these guys were like ex-Navy SEALs. They call this guy, they work for him. They're all, like, it's a private company or whatever it is. They still call him the Admiral, so you get the sense that he was their commanding officer at one point in the past. I think an easy choice for that character would be to make him Mr. Tough Guy, Mr. Alpha Male, Mr. Drill Sergeant. But William H. Macy does this, like, he's super competent. He cares about them, but he does this more like not bumbling at all. Like he's got his shit together.
You can see why they would have followed him as a leader.
Yeah, yeah. You believe that like he's got this like great dad energy, but like dad who does something difficult in a difficult part of the world, and like it's very believable and it's still kind of fun and enjoyable.
And again, this brings up how multi-layered all the male friendships in this movie are, right?
Like they go way back. They're well sketched.
They're super well sketched. Like they go all the way back. Like you already know, even with just a few lines that like, okay, these three guys were in the Navy together. They saw a whole bunch of shit and they developed this deep bond and this deep respect for each other that men in the military do. But like you said, William H. Macy is almost like a dad and he's a kind dad, but he's still going to be mad that you blew up his boat.
Yeah.
And again,
there's no other women in the movie at all. Like as you're saying this, I can't think of a single other woman character.
And it's so weird to me and just like so just depressing that women do not factor into any of these relationships at all. Like the relationships between men are one thing and your relationship with a woman is something totally separate and the two should never like coincide.
Now earlier we name checked The Mummy and National Treasure. Two similar, like, B-movie adventure films that I think are much stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those movies have, like, strong female characters who are very central to the plot and whose relationship to the male character is central to the plot. Maybe Sahara would have been better if it had been more about Penelope Cruz and Dirk Pitt and what she's doing.
I think so. Again, there's probably things that happen in the books, right, that you kind of can't take out of context. I think it might also be the time frame, 2005 for Sahara.
Not that long ago, though.
That long ago, but it is super, it's so depressing to watch this movie as a woman. Now that I think about it, I'm like, oh, I would love to have a cool relationship like that with dudes.
Nope, sorry.
Guess that's not allowed.
So I have I want to hear your thoughts on the McConaughey canon, but I feel like this is actually a critical juncture for the McConaughey career.
Interesting.
So McConaughey, as we've discussed, we watched A Time to Kill, his first big starring role. Like early in his career, he's the hotness, right? He's the next Robert Redford. He does like this string of like really like critically acclaimed, commercially successful movies. He does A Time to Kill. He does Amistad. He does U-571. He does The Newton Boys. He's playing a range of roles. There are dramatic roles. Then he enters into this long, shameful valley of dumb movies, mostly romantic comedies. Few of them are critically successful. Not that many of them are commercially successful. To me, Sahara is the point of the cliff. Because, again, they were clearly setting this up to be a big... This was the next Indiana Jones in their minds. It had a huge marketing budget. McConaughey was the executive producer. Apparently, he went on, like, a trip down the Amazon and, like, rode a Winnebago across the country.
And like, he really leaned into it.
Yeah, he was like, oh, this is my... I am setting up my whole career with this movie right now. And big flop. Giant flop. And not even that fun of a movie.
I think
it's tragic.
I think that it's not his fault, though, right?
Whose fault is it?
Matthew. It's not Matthew McConaughey's fault.
Yeah, but he, like, you can tell that he, like, he had a lot to do with this movie.
Oh, and so I think I see what you're saying.
He shares some of the blame for it not being. If it was going to be the thing they clearly wanted it to be, somebody should have done some editing.
I think that what is missing here is some kind of emotional core. I think that's the problem, right? Because you've got Dirk as this guy who is all bravado and all shine, and there's not a single thing wrong with him, right? He has no flaws.
Yes, you're right.
He's got does he have anything that would inspire empathy within us?
No, nothing goes wrong for him. Even when he's in the direst of circumstances, nothing goes wrong for him.
I think that's the problem, is that he's not a very relatable hero at all. Right? Let's talk about Jack Ryan, right? Like, there's bits of Jack Ryan in this film. And Jack Ryan, I think, was a success because people wanted to relate to, like, office worker who gets a shot to be out in the field.
The Jack Ryan characters are all kind of hard to relate to.
Well, to a degree, right? But the Jack Ryan stuff was, to me, super unbelievable because there's this, like, office worker who all of a sudden learns how to kick ass. But Dirk is so over the top that he might as well be a superhero without any of that superhero baggage.
Yeah, he's definitely a superhero. Like, again, if you go back to, like, The Mummy or National Treasure, those characters were definitely flawed. Like, they were, yeah, you know, the Brendan Fraser character is grumpy and he has trouble making relationships, and the Nick Cage character is obsessive and, you know, destroys his personal relationships.
Exactly.
And,
like, he's hyper-focused on this one thing to the detriment of everything else in his life.
But not Dirk Pitt. Nope. Dirk Pitt has got it all going on, and the ladies, too.
Dirk can sleep with whoever he wants.
So I think you're right about the character not having, like, yeah, there's no emotional core to the character, or there's no flaws to the character. But again, I think if it had been, like, a 90-minute, you know, like, fun, wacky comedy, it still would, like, it wouldn't have mattered that the character was just.
It should have been Speed, right?
It should have been Speed, yeah.
Steve Zahn should have been the Sandra Bullock character, and then Keanu Reeves as Matthew McConaughey, and just, like, have them be in a bus. So.
Speed is actually another great example of a movie where, like, you understand why that man and that woman are falling for each other.
Yes!
It's not just because of proximity.
Right, like, and this is such a foregone conclusion, right? You've got two super hot people in a film, and she's the only woman. Like, there's no tension here, right?
Yeah.
They're supposed to be love interests.
So where do you think this falls in the McConaughey canon?
It's so interesting because this is, to me, this is like the peak McConaughey role. It's everything
yes, it's
he's
so
good
McConaughey.
At. But again, it is a forgettable blip in his actual, like, IMDb database.
Well, I think it's a great dead end, right? This is the end of McConaughey as the would-be action star. Like, this is when he was about to be.
I like that.
He was about to be the next Tom Cruise here, had this worked. If this had been, like, what they obviously wanted it to be, that would have been it. We wouldn't be doing this podcast. He would have had a completely different career.
He would be starring in Mission Impossible, basically.
Yes, exactly.
I'm trying to think of the Keanu parallel here, right? Where he had one, if he had, like, a big action movie that just kind of flopped.
When I think, you know, Keanu Reeves had a much stronger track record of action movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think, if anything, this, like, yeah, we saw, like, with Keanu, there was a couple of attempts where he was going to be, like, a dramatic actor or, like, a typical leading man. Had they worked, we would have had a very different Keanu career. Had Sahara been what they wanted it to, yeah, he would have been Harrison Ford for the rest of his career.
I think that's really fair, but it did not work. I think this movie is actually really enjoyable. Like, there's a lot of it that's really frustrating, and most of it for me, now that we're talking about it, I think is envy. I want to be a part of this, like, cool road trip.
You want to go on Dirk Pitt's adventures.
Yeah, I want to go on Dirk Pitt's adventures. I don't want to be the doctor who's, like, dealing with sick people. I want to do cool stuff.
I feel like you're over-identifying with Penelope Cruz in this movie.
I don't know. But also, they did the one thing which I hate, is that they try to make hot women look less hot by putting glasses on them and putting their hair back.
Yeah.
You're never going to make Penelope Cruz look less hot.
Plus, glasses and hair back is hotter than not glasses and not hair back.
She's just super hot, and everybody should just accept that she's hot.
What happened to Penelope Cruz? Like,
she's making really good movies.
What is she making? I feel like she was a big star back in the day.
No, I think she's still a big star. She's making, like, really good movies with Pedro Almodovar. She's married to Javier Bardem.
I just haven't kept up with her career, apparently.
Oh, no. She's doing really well for herself, so I'm okay.
Podcast season 4, Penelope Cruz.
Oh, my God. We totally should do it. She's done a lot of really sexy movies.
You're so into her that I feel like maybe it's not a good idea, because I don't know that I would feel comfortable hearing this every week.
She's so pretty, and she's a good actress. So
yeah, she deserves better than the material she was given in Sahara.
All right. Well, I would be curious to know if our listeners have enjoyed Sahara.
What did you think about Sahara, or Sahara, if you prefer?
Get at us on Twitter. I'm at @HemJaveri. Brian is @Brian_Minter.
Don't forget to give this podcast a 5-star triple thumbs up rating on the internet. The podcast deserves it, and we are interested in reaching a larger audience given the sheer caliber of handcrafted audio content we are putting out each and every week here in Hemel's lavishly appointed podcasting studio.
Who else is digging this deep into Matthew McConaughey's career?
Nobody, that's who.
Nobody.
And, may I say, the current Keanu Reeves is all but oversaturated now. You were ahead of the curve. You started that shit.
Thank you.
So I feel like, you know, maybe we missed the boat with McConaughey. But if nothing else, people need to understand what we're coming from.
That's true. True. We're very on topic and on trend, ahead of the cultural zeitgeist.
Right ahead, right on the bleeding edge of the cultural zeitgeist, coming at you each and every week here at the newly christened 10 Movies Podcast.